Yeah, because I it's really hard to overstate how much of an impact Dave Sim had on me and what I do. So, like, I get R. Crumb a lot, but when I'm in my head and I'm in the zone, I feel much more akin to wherever it is that Dave was. It's hard to explain without referencing any specific sequences out of his comics, but the organic sort of thing, like, apparently he would pretty much sort of make it up as he went along, knowing that he had a map to follow, but he didn't worry too much about following that when he was down there actually drawing the comics and stuff. So it sounded like a really weird process, and part of his big thing was self-publishing, and so a very influential idea that he transmitted via some of his writings that I picked up on was that there's no reason that in like a self-published sort of situation where you just, it's just a couple guys that know each other, or guys and gals or whatever, they don't need the artificial sort of studio system roles. Like, that's why there's no real clear distinction, I think, partly between James and myself as to who's the author and who's the artist, So,
Does
yeah,
that
didn't
sort
know.
of, in a way, kind of bring it all the way back to Dungeons and Dragons in the
I think,
sense that, you could script a pretty damn good story from a high level D&D game, but at the center of it is this dice that is deciding what happens next. And if you get too deep into there, whatever is behind that 12-sided cube or whatever it is starts to take on some sort of nebulous identity of because the things that happen seem to start to make sense or whatever. And that if you had a comic, if your own chaotic life became the die that it's sort of tumbling and fumbling and deciding where the story goes next, you kind of become in communion with that other, which you have to basically, give into completely. You can't really half-ass that kind of thing. I was also thinking of like Philip K. Dick with The Man in the High Castle, where he allowed the I Ching to kind of decide what happened next within the story.
As far as D&D goes, I think only James could really speak to that, because even though he's like, you're a dungeon master, say, if you're playing D&D, you're st it's and it's not all up entirely to the dice either, because the people are making decisions too, the player characters. So you've got to be able to respond in real time. So you're kind of like an author as a DM in that situation, but you have to be receptive to the people you're dealing with, and that can feed back into what's going on. So, yeah, maybe James would know more about the dynamics there. Oh, sorry. I guess.
James is concerned that if he unmutes his mic, that his baby's gonna scream.
Yeah, apparently that happens quite often if James puts his attention towards the computer when it needs to be there. Griff will explode with the need for attention. So.
So I love the idea that Cerebus is the three-headed dog that guards the underworld, and that, like, I'm looking at this piece here of Cerebus where he's like asleep, and then it's hard to explain, but it's like this double-sided. I put it up, and he's gripping onto his bed like he can't. It's like his dream world looking down, or literally looking up, because up is down and down is up, on himself sleeping, and looks like he's like terrified. If that's what I'm, if I'm looking at this correctly.
It's fucking awesome, man.
But I love like the idea of like this whole artistic realm and what you guys are playing with being like, in a sense, our underworld, because the things that you tap into when you're in an inspired place with your art, sometimes even after the fact, like, you'll recognize things that are so insightful that you're like, how did I not do that intentionally? That looks so intentional. Like, afterwards, it's like your subconscious is always ahead of yourself, you know, and will end up communicating things to you that you aren't even aware that it's attempting to. Like, there's that break. What do you think?
Yeah, happy accidents are really important. Like, Riot Fish also was a musical thing. So, and music, especially electronic music, to break up the monotony, the happy accidents are really, really, really key. So, I don't do a lot of electronic music anymore, but for me, it would be a mix of live recordings and experiments and feeding it back into the machine. And I don't know, it's sort of a mulching and composting process. That's the best way I can put it.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
James, are you staying muted, or you have to go?
He's tending to his baby right now. That's what I think you meant.
No, I know. I just said, got G2G, I assume. Okay. I just want to know if you'll be back. Okay, cool. Cool.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I like it. Was something that typed here. He says, whatever happens, then everyone has to deal with it, no matter how inconvenient the die roll or the logical consequence of what someone did. I just really like this. And this seems to me, and not only a good creative element, but it seems to me the way sort of life kind of works sometimes. You know, that we can go along with some things, and sometimes even these horrible accents, like we mentioned to Fukushima, you know, not to put a smiley face on tragedy, just saying sometimes it's these things draw our attention. Like I said, you know, me doing this research and realizing, wait a second, there already was an enormous amount of nuclear contamination for decades was building up from all these atomic tests, and now here we have something else to sort of draw our attention to it. Again, you know, unfortunate in the small picture, but maybe big picture, I don't know. You know, I would like to think that it's something that kind of draws our attention. It's something like, well, now that we have to deal with it, let's actually address some of these bigger problems.
Yeah. Gosh. Yep, I just blanked again.
I drew a blank, and it's the best thing I ever drew.
Or as the man said, I'm as blank as a fart. That actually, that's from a Twin Peaks movie, Fire Walk With Me. That Frenchman always cracked me up because, oh man, I really hope that Twin Peaks isn't what people in America think of Canada as being like, because there are not Frenchmen on the other side here of Washington State. I don't know. It's talking about breaking down the barriers between reality and fiction. That whole thing has really done a number on me, because I'm only a couple hours north of there, and it's the same basic terrain. So growing up, it was like you almost feel like, oh, this almost feels like it was meant for me, and this is really weird and spooky, and who knows what it did to me. Like, I was like 12 years old when I watched this show.
A lot of Douglas firs near you?
All kinds of things.
No, you know how in Twin Peaks he keeps commenting on, what kind of trees are these? Douglas firs.
Yeah. But shit. Kind of hope that James can take over, because I think the problem is I really have to urinate after drinking all that coffee.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah,
sorry, guys. Yeah.
So, David, I know you actually addressed the atomic bomb stuff in your Sync Book chapter, and I've been writing about it for Suicide Kings. How do you feel about the fact that that, you know, basically these guys are tapping into the same thing? I think it's just wonderful that there's this sort of you know, common subject and all these different takes on it.
Yeah, I literally feel like it's pulling me in rather than like my attention is drifting towards it. I'm not necessarily like calling it up is seriously my feeling. Like that's like what I was just saying about that piece of artwork that I did, that I look at, I'm having this theme that in the first place is just doing itself. Like, I'm like, what goes here? Oh, a fucking atomic bomb goes here. Oh, what goes here? Mushroom. When I did that in the first place, I wasn't even considering that, okay, here I have a mushroom cloud and here I have a mushroom. Even though I've considered that link before, it wasn't on my mind. Like, it was like subconscious, you know? And then, like, I'm like, oh, I observed that. And then it was like, a few minutes later, I'm looking at the thing and I'm like, oh, the whole thing's an A-bomb. It's like, I feel like it wants its own attention, like, for real, you know? And, like, all these things, like, I was studying, to a degree, the Moonchild thing. I had read Crowley's Moonchild, and then I read a bit about L. Ron Hubbard and Jack Parsons and was considering that and heard Hoagland's take on things and was like really just like exploring that area. And then I'm like getting into Rosemary's Baby and getting into the Beatles and then getting it, and like the connections were just wanting to be made in the first place. Like I didn't really feel like I was making them, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny because I was trying to figure out how much of this stuff to address in my book, and I sort of felt like I had chopped down to a sort of digestible size, and then, oh wow, there's this, then oh wow, there's this, and it's like, oh no, okay, keep trying to chop it down. And then I love that you were able to do, you know, we really speak to a certain heart of the matter in your Sync Book chapter of at least, you know, opening that can of worms up.
I don't think there's a way to change it. I keep thinking of so many things that I want to include, and I'm just like, whatever, like I'll maybe hopefully write a book, you know, but there's like all these other factors that I'm like, oh, but that's so important, but like they're also important generally to the master thesis, you know, for backing things up. I'm like, you know, I'm starting out with certain assumptions like, oh, people know the value of LSD, right? And it's like, no, do people realize that like the double helix structure, like the idea of the double helix relating to DNA, was something that was considered under the influence of lysergic acid, like that is currently admitted. And then when you consider that the double helix was, I mean, we all know like the, the caduceus, like that symbol, like is so ancient, always attributed to the serpent. And also the whole thing with the pole star in Draco, and how there's this whole thing in the Zohar about basically these lines of force, like extending literally from Draco, it's like the zero point. Like that's in the Zohar. Like they take it that way because when they're looking at the word, they're like, what does this word mean? What is this word in relationship to? I'd have to look it up in Kaplan's Sefer Yetzirah, but he's talking about like you have this Draco, which is the serpent, and then all the pathways as far as our planet Earth is concerned are said to be like extending from Draco, like from the serpent. Like that's just a trip. Like where did the European occultists like associate this lightning flash with the serpent? Like where did that come from? Well, they were reading Ramach, obviously. Like there's plenty of clues to that. And then Ramach is here in his commentary going on and on about these kind of ideas. And so I think that there's definitely like something to this, like, you know,
not to get, you know, Freudian sexual here, but, you know, they could have studied these things or they could have looked in their pants and realized, right. Oh, life originates from a serpent.
Right. No, totally. I couldn't agree more. And then you get everything out of that, because the serpent itself, like in the Hebrew, you have he's the most cunning of all the creatures in the garden, and then he's also the most naked, meaning he's the most exposed and he's the most hidden at the same time. And what is ego? Like our roots of ego are like in the dinosaurs. Like, you know, the dinosaurs were here and they roamed the earth and now they roam us. they're not really gone. Like, they never really went anywhere. Like, the external expression of the dinosaurs left, but our whole ego structure is, like, basically dinosaurs. It's the weirdest shit ever, but that's, like, my closest association, because it's the most obvious thing, it's the most exposed thing, and yes, it's the most cunning thing at the same time. And it is very, like, it can be very serpentine in, like, its expression. Like, if it gets challenged, ever, like, what comes out is very much like a fucking reptile. And so, like, I think that there's something to be said for, like, the roots of creation in terms of how it's expressed themselves as basically reptilian. And so, of course, like, you know, this is all in plain sight. Like, it's not like this whole idea, like the David Icke serpent cult, where it's like these people talk to these people and gets very conspiratorial to it. I think that there is a level of conspiracy, and at the same time, these are archetypal, which means they're universal, which means they're going to express themselves no matter what. You know, every serpent in their pants if they're male, and if they're female, they have a serpent hole for it to crawl into. You know, it's like
yeah.
And then our
I like the idea that you said the dinosaurs roamed the earth, and now, like, if we look at the idea of the oil that we use in our cars as sort of a product of the dinosaur age, then we see that they're still roaming.
I like that.
Yeah. No, I think they're roaming our minds in the same way that the Native Americans are roaming Americans' minds, because there's no repressing this. I mean, you can repress it to a degree, but it surfaces in all these different ways, which come out as dysfunction. And so I feel like the dinosaurs are very similar in that regard. You know, they're here, like they're in us, like, and there's no, it's because we're on their shoulders, you know, we're built on top of them. And so they come up through us and they express themselves as like our ego autonomy, you know, despite the fact that we would like to not recognize that. I feel like that's there.
Yeah, man.
No.
Oh, shit.
And that's all expressed in your piece, right, Justin?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, there's... Gosh. I mean, the birds are there.
There are serpents coming from that sort of creative chaos of that explosion in the center.
Oh, I wish you hadn't said creative chaos. Every year there's a, every year there's some sort of this fun fair crafts thing that they hold just down the road from me called creative chaos, and it's supposed to be like a folk art kind of thing, but it's this big expensive market for white people with money. So I just.
Got you. Oh, sorry. Got you. I understand.
I have a very rhythmic mind, so.
No, it was funny, you know, you talked about going to these, like, small press conventions and doing all the, you know, the sort of focus on self-publishing, and I see, you know, every time some sort of new convention starts that starts with a focus on the small independent artist, it only takes a few years for that to get too big to really be anything interesting.
Yeah, and then, in Vancouver, it was even weirder for me. Like, I was, like, cynical from the get-go because there's no clear distinction. Like, the small press, it's called Comics and Stories. I haven't been since about 2008. I went about 3 or 4 times, held once a year. But yeah, like the people that would show up there, I mean, small press doesn't necessarily mean anything in particular. It just means you did it yourself. Like, guys, I wound up sitting next to, I can't remember the name of their comic, but it was, they were filmmakers, and they wanted to do a comic about superheroes in the downtown east side of Vancouver, which is Hastings and everything. It's a very impoverished and brutal area. It's I don't know how well known it is outside of Canada, but yeah, they wanted to do a superhero comic, and it was like, oh yeah, we actually wanted this to be a movie originally, but we couldn't afford to do a movie, and they were treating it like kind of like the whole thing was this. They were very media savvy, let's put it that way, and I just felt really awkward being seated next to these guys. So it was, yeah, these distinctions are always blurred for me because there's industry people there that show up at these things. So
Oh yeah. You know, that's just it. When you say like small press, it kind of brings us back to the food conversation of like, is it organic? Is it all natural? Is it small press? It's an independent film. I love how we have independent films coming out of Warner Brothers. No, it's not a fucking independent film if it's from Warner Brothers.
They blur the line.
What's that?
They blur the line.
Yeah.
Very intentional. So,
I don't know. It's really interesting. Like, and you know, I went to a thing a few years ago. I had got a table at a small press expo down in, like, near D.C., and traveled down there, and they said, oh, you know, we made some sort of mistake with your booking, and the table that we had for you isn't available. But do you know the guy who did the Bone comics, Jeff Smith, thank you, yeah. So Jeff Smith canceled, so like, so you can have Jeff Smith's table. So I'm like, wow, okay. You know, I'm thinking that's kind of cool, maybe we'll get more traffic or whatever. Which actually really didn't work out for us because everyone came and they're like, where's Jeff Smith? And like, he's not here. And I'm like, and they're like, oh, your comic sucks. I want Jeff Smith. You know, it's like, all right, fuck you, thank you, have a nice day. Thanks for wasting my time. If you know, it kind of didn't, but whatever. But just the idea that, like, you know, Bone is still, you know, it's smaller than, say, Superman, but I don't know if that's really small press. I mean,
oh yeah, the different audience. I mean,
oh, the dude that Jeff Smith is he was a professional animator for quite a while at that point when he came up with that. So, yeah, him and Dave Sim actually have some history. There was this whole thing where Dave Sim called him out. He wanted to, because he said that Jeff was lying about some stuff, and Dave basically challenged him to a boxing match. Dave was really big on Norman Mailer, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting how we see these lines get blurred so easily, and then, you know, it's like you said that. The creative chaos thing, what you describe, I've seen a lot of those events here, and it's basically, you know, either you have the starving artist. Like, I've actually heard, you know, years ago they used to refer to it as, like, oh, we're going to the starving artist show. And it would basically be, you know, the people with money would go and look at a bunch of paintings and then get cheap artwork for their house. You know, it's like, you know, do you get to feel, you get to both feel good that you're supporting the arts and feel superior that, here's this support, you know, starving artist that I get to, I don't know, just the whole shit is kind of crazy. And then I don't see, again, I just feel like, this is why I look at time and cycles, and a part of me has accepted this kind of stuff, because like I said, we had a new sort of small press thing start up a few years ago, and then it started to get bigger and a little bigger and a little bigger and a little bigger, and it was a nice alternative at some point to the big comic cons, you know, with like giant fucking stages for Marvel Comics, and it's like just, you know, this madhouse scene where there's just really unappealing to me. And this is this nice alternative of these small press shows, and then every year it got a little bigger. And you know, this like last year, I was like, "Meh, you know, I don't think I want to go." But you know, in another year or two, there'll be something smaller and kind of start again.
Well, I used to be involved with a local artist-run gallery, and I mean, it really it's. This, all of this stuff is so provisional. Like we went to I was there for about 2 years. I paid to be there. It was like certain, I got to have a studio in this space that was right downtown here and stuff. Did a little, it was mostly volunteer work and stuff, but there was eventually, they did a, we went down to Kelowna, about half an hour drive from here, the bigger center, and there were people from all over BC, from a network of artist-run galleries, and they're just sort of to have a discussion amongst the artists at the artist run galleries, just it astounded me to realize like how many different configurations of the artist run gallery there could be. Like ours here in Vernon, it's a little more, I don't know, folk art oriented to an extent. And the one in Kelowna is a little more metropolitan. They like to bring in strange installation pieces, video pieces, and all kinds of stuff. Whereas other people related, you know, they were a loose club of people that whenever they wanted to do something, they would rent a space and come together for that specific event. So, you know, there was no one way to do it. So, and I'm not really sure if a lot of people out there consuming media realize just how weird it is out there in the world of art. And Chris Knowles talks about this sort of stuff all of the time. So I'm sure that people are aware that there's some, the levels of complexity in the art, so-called art world are, well, they're kind of disturbing at times. So I think James and myself are kind of aware of some of those weird spaces, those gray areas. And I think it's a conscious choice to try to stand apart from that. So, but I mean, if I wind up selling out in the next year or two, then, well, that's the way it goes. I guess, I don't know. It's like, I'm not sure where I was going with that.
It's interesting how so many artists who have quote unquote made it that we're familiar with today, when you hear like their backstories, like especially in their beginnings, how rough of a time they had. I mean, like Frank Frazetta, like when he was producing like comic book work, it was like people didn't recognize or like give him like the real time of day to like, you know, it was definitely like a lot of these people are like held back by the quote unquote industry, you know, and it's really unfortunate because I think a lot of potential is like hidden all over the place due to that. And the fact that like what gets exposed, just like in the music industry, is like it's not always a clear picture of what's actually happening. Like, you know how many films get produced and made that don't actually get to be like shown in any real way, and like that most people have no idea that that kind of filmmaking even exists yet. Like, it's so crazy.
Yeah, it seems, I don't know, I wanted to get into computer animation back in the late 90s, early 2000s. So I took a computer animation course, just a small locally developed thing, but it was billed as being a you know, the full meal deal. And but it was there that I learned that the entertainment industry actively tries to discourage people from participating or something. Like our instructor told us that they're like, you've really got to go for this if you really want to be a professional. It's just, I don't know, it's, there's layers there that we would need like 5 or 6 more hours to go through. And I don't know, it's for me, the interesting part is the telling tales out of school part. And that's the part that a lot of people don't want to talk about. But it seems to me that that's where the really interesting stuff happens. So,
well, it's a pyramid scheme, right? I mean, they mm-hmm. won't, there's like this idealized kind of like having a lot of consumers who, and also be simply spectators who are just willing to pay and like basically want this shit on their walls. Like what you're saying about like the taxidermy, they just want art so that they can hang it like, you know, it's a detachment from the actual process, and it becomes more about the symbol than it is the actual thing and what it is and what it's about and where it came from. And so, you know, that's why your cup of coffee costs $5 and it costs pennies to make, and the artist, you know, is struggling and doing it, spending so much work and so much energy, and then people aren't willing to pay, you know, what they pay for that coffee. Like, it's this weird fucking thing. And then if they are, they generally are doing it for completely different reasons. It's just like there's definitely a hierarchical thing that develops, but that develops everywhere. So of course you'd see it there like anywhere else, you know?
Yeah. Same as in food. I mean, but there's, as far as modernity goes, it's that disconnect that I think is really important. The whatever it is that gets in between people and the underlying reality, it's everything's mediated through culture and and artifacts and civic structures. I don't know. It's very hard to wrap your head around. the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But well, I think, yeah, I was trying to, I think we're trying to wrap up here though, aren't we? So
yeah. So, James writes this, he says that he has a quote here and he, but he doesn't predict, that he'll be able to say it. He says, 60 years ago tomorrow, anything now it's 65, about 65 years. But at the time of the quote, 6 years ago tomorrow, the crew of the Enola Gay watched in awe as their payload detonated over the city of Hiroshima. As the bomb exploded, we saw the entire city disappear, said Commander Robert Lewis. I wrote in my log, my God, what have we done?
It's not a secret what happened, so, like, I don't know what to say. We're living in a very unnatural world at the moment, and as far as I'm concerned, we've done it to ourselves.
Well, the fact that there was ever any nuclear technology on that island after 200,000 plus people got evaporated by nuclear technology just seems kind of fucking silly to me to bring
You have to realize, Phil, it's their entire fucking country has been culturally colonized.
Right.
You know, so it's not just that they put an atomic reactor there, but, you know, when I went to Japan, as soon as I got out, road signs look exactly like the American highway signs. It's like, oh, because the fucking same contractors were brought in to, hey, you know, we'll bring our contractors. I remember growing up and hearing this story of like, well, yeah, we blew up Japan, but, you know, we actually helped them rebuild. I remember hearing that as a child in school and thinking like, oh, I don't quite understand that, but okay. And like, then being an adult and realizing, no, it's like basically, you know, we destroy you and remake you in our image.
Right.
You know, half the signs in Japan, maybe not half, but a good percentage of them, are in English. And I'm like, no, I'm in a foreign country. I don't want to see English. I go into a store and they're playing Britney Spears on the radio. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? You know, it's very scary. I mean, there's still culture there, but it certainly has been, you know, it has a layer of concrete poured over it, let's say.
Yeah, we're still in the boot print of World War II, so I can't see out of that myself, so.
Yeah. Very surprising and very, very disappointing. But you could see, you know, Western cultures, I was going to say thumbprint, but I like bootprint probably is probably more accurate. You could really see the imprint that was left. And this is how many years later, it's kind of insane.
Yeah, it's just the lay of the land now. And yeah, in biology, I think at least there's a marine biologist who came up with the term shifting baselines. And in the context of, I think it was in Chesapeake Bay, out on the East Coast, with collapsing cod fisheries, and I think that's what it was, and I think some sort of shellfish industry. It's just the idea that, you know, like 150 years ago, there would have just been like just masses of these animals out there. And they would have had a different idea of what a normal catch and eat year would have looked like. And these days it's completely different because the people that grew up are used to seeing a completely different environment. Like literally the environment and everything that's in it has changed. So to me, there's a physical aspect to all of this that just can't be separated out. So I'm not really sure where I'm going with that as usual.
Can I just throw something in here really quick? Looking at your piece, I love the fucking sunflower that's like close to the explosion, the way that it's actually like dividing and multiplying. Like you can see it's like the split. Like
yep.
There's two faces of the sunflower. Like that's really a, like that was one thing that was occurring to me. There was this thing going around the sync community around two suns. Jupiter basically being a second sun, and this whole idea of the symbolism of the second sun. And I was thinking of Tatooine and 2010, the sequel to A Space Odyssey and whatnot, The Year We Made Contact. But like that you have like two suns basically in a sunflower, and how in order for something to expand, it has to divide, and how us dividing the atom is how we produce the, I mean, the explosion itself is a searching for equilibrium in a place where it can't find it. And as a result, it just does this thing, which is basically like it explodes like this giant fucking sun, you know, which is what Oppenheimer referred to it as. It was this thousand suns at once lighting up the sky, you know, like, but I think it's, I keep considering the idea of like relating us to like the dinosaurs. If we want to have like an end time idea, it's not actually ending just yet. I wouldn't imagine, even with radiation, that there's an adaptability that takes place, and that like just it, you kind of have to really back up if you want to consider what I'm not trying to rationalize or say that this is a fucking positive thing, because it's obviously not. But in terms of long term, what could come out of this? It really is unknown, and I think that there's like something about the thing dividing in order to expand, and how that expansion can happen initially on other levels that aren't as plainly visible. So that's my two cents.
Wow. Yeah,
I like that. Bill, I know Bill's looking to wrap up. Let me ask you guys, Justin and James, if there's a crying baby, don't worry about it. I want you to, anything you guys want to leave off on, you know, please, of course, we want to encourage everyone to check out riotfish.com. If there's anything you want to put in here, please, the floor is yours.
James, are you there? I guess there's no James.
There
he is. Closing comments, James?
I want to end on that Enola Gay quote.
Sorry?
That Enola Gay quote.
What?
I consider that my closing comment. I don't
consider that. Oh, the Enola. Yeah, okay, that's all James has to contribute. Well, yeah.
Now that I said that, I have one.
Closing comments. Okay, go ahead.
I want to put in some too long didn't reads. Symbols in there.
Oh, in the comic?
Yeah, like the, if you have that lol flower.
Yeah, too long didn't read. That's a problem.
Yeah.
I have a question. Sure. Why is boundaries spelled that way?
Oh. At first it was just a typo, but at least I think it was a typo. I don't even know at this point. I had the military on the mind.
So it's Aries.
I was envisioning Gamork as somebody on our side, trying to interlope into the never-ending story, but. So, I don't know. That's a weird...
So by him saying there are no boundaries spelled that way, it's like the Ares, the god of war, is no longer bound. It's like Ares unleashed. There are no bound Ares.
Yeah, it's a bit of a pun. But my controlling idea, I just wanted to put something in there that was explicitly, god of war thing, basically.
Yeah.
There's a military issue here that people are literally afraid to talk about and deal with. Like, this was actually a very traumatizing experience working on this, because I had to delve deeper into material that I realized I've been trying to ignore. So, I guess closing comments. I don't know if that touched the Aries thing. Like, I can't really with it on the same symbolic level that you guys have and do all the time, but closing comments, I think there's the phrase, everything is connected, and I think that is both a blessing and a curse, because it implies great responsibility and need for awareness of what's actually going on and the ramifications of everyone's moment-to-moment decisions on what they're doing here. So it's good that we're all connected, but at the same time, if you put some bad shit into that system, it's going to spread just like the radiation.
Mm-hmm. Like that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You know, I'm just going to say here, I made an image for this episode already. Mm-hmm. I took a few things, but I took your second to last panel of the guy sitting on the couch watching, where it says, "We now return to the A-Team."
Mm-hmm.
And I actually animated a little bit something that it's just like a TV flicker on his face. And it now occurs to me that the guys on the first page, where you have like your Oppenheimer and such watching the atomic bomb explosion from behind the sandbags, could also be basically represented the same way, of them having that sort of ghastly glow on their face, and him at the end having the ghastly glow. The light of the atomic bomb and the light of the TV sort of being two sides of the same thing.
Right, totally, and it's radiation far fucking yeah. out. Yeah, totally, that's so awesome.
Yep.
Yeah. Amazing job, guys. Really, I'm really impressed with your work. I love the web comics you guys have up. Newspaper comic strip is... I think one of the more intelligent things that I've seen done with comic strips in a long time. The parodies you do, the random commercial parodies, are really, really well done. And this contribution to Sync Book 2 is, you just keep raising the bar, and I'm just really, really impressed and really honored that you guys came through and did this with us.
Thanks. This really just seemed like a well-timed sort of event. So I threw myself into it with everything I had. So I know it's probably going to be an editing nightmare, but
you'd be surprised how little of a nightmare it really is. But
yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us. I definitely think that down the road having you back would be. Pretty essential to the conversation that's going on here. So.
Sure, it's the conversation that I like the most, to tell the truth. So,
cool. Thank you. You guys are awesome.
Nice. All right, guys.
All right,
thanks. Have a great day, everyone. I'll talk to you all soon. Thanks, James. All right. Have a great day. Give our best to Child, and talk to you soon. Okay.
Okay.